This is episode 4 of the Brad Whitley Show. I'm Brad Whitley. In this episode, I talk about mouse control basics and what I've been up to since my last show. Stick around. Welcome to the Brad Whitley Show. This is about the pest management professional. Do it yourself as a welcome. You can follow me and my show at hometownpestservices.com. Also, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and email. It's all right there. Links will be at the show notes at hometownpestservices.com/mouse control basics. Oh man, we're going to talk about salmonella, tapeworm, what to do, how to build them out. There's all kinds of stuff going on today. But I want to tell you a little bit about what I've been doing since the last show. The family came back from vacation, none the worse for wear. Man, my wife got dark. She's Lebanese, so that's going to play a part later in the show when we start talking about raw meats. But, yeah, she got a big old suntan. And, you know, my son had his motorcycle. He was riding home. And the girls, they just, you know, everybody had a blast playing in the water. You know, every time I see videos or pictures of my daughter playing in the water, and she just, you know, looks like, you know, we're back when she's 4 or 5 when we're in the water. But anyway, a lot of fun to see them having fun. So that was a good time. Nothing major here, really. Nothing going on. The dogs seem to be getting better. They're ornery. What else you gonna do? I don't know. Anyway, let's get into it. This show is about mouse control, and I may have done some talks about this before, but this is a very important issue with mice and rats too, to be honest with you. But mouse control basics starts with knowing the mouse. Mice are very curious. They're not like me. They like to nibble and not gorge themselves on many different types of food. So it's almost like cockroaches being omnivorous, right? They just think, man, omnivores. Eat anything. Eat anything. They prefer seeds, however. They do prefer seeds and sweetened liquids over plain water. You know, put you some little Kool-Aid in some water if you're trying to deal with them in certain ways with liquid baits. They do like the Gatorade. Food is in an abundance. They're not going to travel more than 5 feet from the nest. Otherwise, 20 feet is the norm. They have been known to go further, just a little further than 50 feet. I know in my training, in 96, you know, they said put rodent bait stations out, you know, 20 feet. So that's what we do. They're going to find it. They're going to find the bait. But if there's competition for food, yeah, probably not going to, you know, you got to get rid of all the food competition. That's big. So if they're right outside by the trash cans, move the trash cans, put the bait stations right there. But anyway, you know, and of course, mice are nocturnal and have bad eyesight. You mentioned nocturnal. I've seen them during the day. I think we all have, maybe. I do on occasion see them hanging around. A lot of people think you know, they're seeing them during the day, and I guess you can, you know, but they like to be around at night. Now, these guys, I don't know, every pup, right? That's what they're called, the little guys. They're called pups, pinky sometimes. You know, we talk about no more than 5 feet. I've used to treat a feed storage facility, and they were in the pallets. And, you know, a lot of them wouldn't move from the pallet. You know, the pallet, there's a food source, and a lot of times they get the moisture from the food source and don't need abundant amount of water. But they will hang out in pallets of seed. So if you're one of these big box stores or whatever, rotate that product. Don't keep it in the on the pallet for. I'm not going to say the name of the company, but man, they would not rotate the stock. The stock in the back, up against the wall, they had pallets of this stuff stocked on top of each other, you know, and they were kind of falling over. Didn't know why they had the mouse problem. I said, well, let's unload, you know, and it took too long. They weren't going to do it, but I had them do one line, one column of mouse seed or bird seed. And man, pinkies everywhere. Mice everywhere. I was catching hundreds of them weekly. They paid for it. I mean, they wanted to pay for it. I'd catch snakes too because they didn't have a snake problem. They had a mouse problem, but the snakes were following the mice, right? So anyway, mice, when they, and they're mammals, so when they give birth, all the pups, they reach sexual maturity in about 35 days. Okay. Pregnancy is from 18 to 21 days. Litter size can be 5 to 8 pups per litter, and they have 8 litters per year, approximately. Mice can live up to 6 years, but many of them live about 1 year. So unless you have 20 feral cats in your home or your business, you'll need another method of control. Promise you that. Now, contamination is a huge problem with mice and rats, for that matter. They're commensal rodents, which means eat together at the same table, and that's with humans. And this also means that they're a big nuisance. They damage or destroy other property. They're gnawing. Gnawing is big. Not only will they gnaw on soft material, but also hard. They've chewed through wires and jet airplanes. You know, and they kind of get on us, right, about when we're on the plane and using the electronics on the plane. Well, you know, maybe it's a mouse problem. Who knows? So the electrical lines, they can eat through that and can cause problems for jetliners. Plastic or metal water lines. How's your water bill? Your water bill climbing up the charts? You're not using more water than you think? Maybe it's a mouse. You know, you got that PEX plastic piping now in the walls. They don't use as much copper like they used to, and now a lot of this stuff is plastic. And I know when our house was built in 2001, they were using PEX pipe and caused a big problem. Really did. We had a situation where the sheetrock crew put a screw right through the PEX line because the plumber, I guess it's up to the plumber, right, when he bores a hole through the stud in the wall, they're supposed to put the metal plates that they just nail up, you know, in front of it. So when a sheetrocker comes around, throws screws in the wall, he doesn't hit the plastic pipe. Well, yeah. That's what happened to us. Our water bill did go up. So in our homes and bird feed, grain storage businesses, contamination of food supply is a big problem. Like I mentioned earlier, mice and rats are vectors of disease and contaminate big time by their droppings. Big time by their droppings. Mice can drop 20 to 50 bombs, loads. All right, poop, 20 to 50 times a day. Why is that important? Because salmonella and tapeworm. Now, salmonella infection is a common bacterial disease, and this is over, I'm reading from an article from the Mayo Clinic about salmonella infection, and it infects the intestinal tract. Humans become infected most frequently through contaminated water and food. Typically, people with salmonella infection have no symptoms. Typically, people with salmonella infection have no symptoms. But salmonella infection is usually caused by eating raw or uncooked meat, poultry, eggs, or egg products. Now, you say eating raw or uncooked meat. I mentioned my wife's Lebanese. We have this great food, and so do the Greeks, by the way. I think Greeks call it tartar, right? We call it kibbeh. Oh, man, it's good. It's like a London broil that's just, you know, minced. It's just finely ground up or whatever. It's got mint, wheat. It's got onion. Oh, man, it's good. It's freaking awesome. But, you know, I even ate it down, you know, during the mad cow disease days. Maybe that's what's wrong with me. I don't know. But, you know, some of the signs can be nausea, vomiting, abdominal cramps, diarrhea, fever, chills, headache, blood in the stool. Okay. So a lot of these symptoms are similar to tapeworm. But salmonella lives in intestines of people, animals, and birds, commonly affect foods like raw meats, poultry, seafood, raw eggs, fruits and vegetables. Okay, many people become contaminated when prepared by people who don't wash their hands thoroughly after using the toilet and changing a diaper. You ever been in the bathrooms, right? Restaurant? A lot of times they'll have on the signs there if the folks that prepare your food, they'll have a sign in there, you know, employees wash hands. You know, everybody should wash their hands after they go to the bathroom, especially public bathrooms. But, you know, they have to put a sign. I think it's it's part of being inspected, right? Got to have signs up there to say, wash your hands. And you hear about people that have salmonella poisoning because they found that, you know, people aren't washing their hands. So it's just, you know, that's basic stuff, but really needs to happen. Now, you can increase your exposure by international travel. Okay, maybe some places have poorer sanitation, maybe typhoid fever type stuff. If you own birds or a reptile, particularly birds and reptiles can carry salmonella bacteria. And here's something about stomach or bowel disorders, right? And acids. Now, I'm on this diet called the keto diet, and we have to eat a lot of apple cider vinegar and pre and probiotics for the gut health. And did you know antacids kills off the good bacteria in your stomach? Helping you get rid of and tear down the salmonella. Antacids lowers your stomach's acidity, allows more salmonella bacteria to survive. Now, being older, I'm 52 now. You know, on this ketogenic diet, which I've lost 95 pounds since October 2019, you know, this is apple cider vinegar, you know, helps break down all that kale and broccoli and cauliflower stuff that I ate. But it also, antacids kill the good bacteria, and I'm trying to feed the bacteria, right, for good gut health. Antacids kill it. So when you go get your penicillin or amoxicillin or whatever, you know, during cold and flu season, you're killing off your stomach bacteria, the good stuff. That'll take care of salmonella. So it's just something to be aware of. Thought it was pertinent to the conversation. And inflammatory bowel disease, it makes it easier for salmonella bacteria to take hold of your gut. Recent use of antibiotics. I meant to say antibiotics, by the way, not antacids. But antibiotics will kill off the good bugs in your stomach. You know, we all have bugs, right? Now, being a bug man, you know, pharmacies kill the bugs inside your body. Of course, we do the bugs on the outside of the body, right? Not talking about scabies, people. Not talking about scabies or head lice, but I'm talking about, you know, rats, mice, other insects, right? So the recent use of antibiotics can reduce your good bacteria in your intestine. That's what I meant to say earlier, not antacids, which they can affect that, the acidity in your stomach. So, yeah, if you have immune problems, all right, AIDS, sickle cell disease, malaria, anti-rejection drugs, taken after organ transplants, corticosteroids, you know, these things create issues in your body that will help salmonella along, right? So, again, prevention, you know, you got to wash your freaking hands. Wash your hands after you use the toilet. Do I need to say this to most people? No. But, you know, we got some little folks that listen to the podcast. We got some people who just, the older folks that don't wash their hands, man. After changing a diaper, after handling raw meat and poultry. My wife's very good at doing that when we make the kibbe meat. Clean up pet feces. I gotta tell you, we've got a German Shepherd. The reason I stayed home from vacation, she had a little issue with her hind parts. And so every once in a blue moon, she would drop a little bitty pea-sized fecal matter. And you have to clean it up, but you have to be careful how you do it. And touching reptiles and birds. Okay. Prevent cross-contamination. Keep things separate. Store raw meat, poultry, and seafood away from other foods in a refrigerator. If possible, have two cutting boards in your kitchen. We do. You know, so one for meats, one for, you know, your fruits, vegetables, whatever, or wash the heck out of it before you use the other one. And avoid eating raw eggs. Now, you know, I don't know. I go to the gym once, twice a week, maybe once or twice a month. I mean, it just depends. But, you know, a lot of the cookie dough is made of raw eggs. Homemade ice cream, eggnog. All right. If you got to consume raw eggs, make sure they've been pasteurized. Pasteurized. All right. And most of them are. They come from the store, right? All right. So that's the salmonella part of it. But now we're going to talk about tapeworm. And it's basically the same type of preventative type stuff. It is a contaminated, you know, water and food. And you actually ingest tapeworm eggs or the larval stage of the tapeworm. Had a one of my customers the other day call me just off topic. I don't know if it's off topic or not. But, you know, my German Shepherd does this too. She said that, do you kill the worms that create intestinal worms in dogs in the yard? Now, I'm in Virginia. I was like, oh, you know what? I don't know. I don't think so. But let me call my VDAX, being my Virginia Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services. I emailed them. Haven't heard back as of yet. It's only been a day. 2 days I did it Friday. Treat the soil because their dogs like to eat the soil and it gives them, you know, worms, not tapeworms so much, but worms in the soil. That's why I say it's off topic. My dog likes to eat the soil out of potted plants. And I hear it's because they're trying to get a mineral that they're deficient in. Now, how the heck does animals know? How do animals know that they're deficient in a mineral? I don't see any dogs walking around in lab coats, you know. I don't see them walking around in any kind of lab or anything. Ooh, lab. Ooh, Labrador retrievers. Labs. Maybe they're the ones. Can't be. Do Labradors work in labs? I haven't seen one. But the adult worm can live up to 30 years in the host. That's you and me. Many people, again, don't have symptoms. But evasive tapeworm signs and symptoms, you know, again, nausea, weakness, loss of appetite, abdominal pain, diarrhea, dizziness, salt cravings. Man, what? I love salt. Weight loss and inadequate absorption of nutrients from food. Again, I lost 90 pounds, but it wasn't from that. Just saying. Hashtag keto. love me some keto. My wife hates that word, by the way. Keto. She's heard it every time somebody says, I don't feel good. I'm like, hashtag keto. All right, what are the causes? You're ingesting the eggs, contaminated food or water, wait a minute. I'm going to read this verbatim because I'm reading something that doesn't make sense as I'm saying it. Let me see. Ingestion of eggs. This is the causes now. If you eat food or drink water contaminated with feces from a person or animal with tapeworm. Okay. No, I read it right. Just didn't sound right, did it? You ingest microscopic tapeworm eggs. For example, a pig infected with tapeworm will pass tapeworm eggs in its feces, which gets into the soil. I don't think my customer has pigs. But again, their dogs don't have tapeworm. I don't think. I don't know. Ingestion of larvae cysts in meat or muscle tissue. Again, you know, we eat the raw kibbeh and, you know, their steak tartare. But, and again, it can live for 30 years in a host. So very, very similar to salmonella. Risk factors, again, poor hygiene, infrequent washing of hands or bathing. Exposure to livestock. Okay, you people on the farms out there, be careful. Traveling to developing countries. So normally with, you know, third world type stuff or, you know, they have poorer sanitation habits. Eating raw or uncooked fish, meat. I'm sorry, not fish. Eating raw or uncooked meats containing pork or beef. Living in endemic areas, right? They list here Latin America, China, sub-Saharan Africa, or Southeast Asia where free-range pigs may be more common. I think we got them down in Texas too, don't we? Wild pigs. There's a TV show, isn't it? And prevention. Wash your hands with soap and water before you eat. Here you go. Freeze meat for as long as 7 to 10 days. And fish for at least 24 hours in a freezer with temperatures of negative 31 degrees Fahrenheit to kill tapeworm eggs and larvae. Then it's okay to eat it. You know, eggs or and larvae, it's nothing but protein. But you don't want them to attach to your intestinal wall. Can you imagine 30 years? How big does that thing get? Does it grow like fish in an aquarium? Depending on how big the aquarium is, it gets larger if you're, you know, I don't know. Just saying. And avoid eating raw, uncooked pork, fish, or beef, and fish. So fish is in there. Promptly treat dogs infected with tapeworm. So that's the salmonella and tapeworm section of droppings, okay? Mainly with droppings for mice. Again, we're talking about mice. But I thought it was information, you know, that should be out there. And I'm, you know, all you got to do is Google it. But droppings are very, you know, it's something that's bad. Poop is bad. Okay. Bat guano, same thing. You don't want to be around fecal matter, right? So, you know, tapeworm and salmonella from droppings. All right. Urine, mouse urine. Mouse urine, now they can't hold their bladder. So we use a black light in our industry, all right, to, you know, the urine fluoresces, but so does some bleaches and other materials. But, you know, when you're using a bleach and you're cleaning, you're basically wiping, right? Smearing, if you will. Black light is going to cause the urine to fluoresce. And the urine will most likely be in a puddle configuration, not in a smear, like wiping something. But if it's fresh, it's going to glow under black light. And it should be in a kind of a puddle, kind of dripping Because they, you know, they pee as they go. Pee as they go. Get on the counters. Ah, they're peeing all over the place. You're in a restaurant, you know, you got a mouse problem. Oh, boy. Inspector comes in there with a black light. Ah, nice. So mouse control starts with building them out. All right. We in the industry know that, you know, you got to identify there's sanitation, there's harbage elimination. But after you do that, you want the main thing that you want to do is build them out of the house. So what you do is you keep them from coming in, you kill what's inside, and the problem's gone. Okay? Doesn't mean they can't create other areas of entry, which is why, you know, ongoing control is a good thing, whether you do it yourself or have a pro do it. But so after you identified that it is a mouse, not a small rat, you've taken care of sanitation issues, taking trash cans further away from the back door, right? Or from any door of a business. You want to push them out. Harbage elimination, you know, if there's boxes, pallets, twig, you know, big sticks, you know, laying around, logs, things like that. You need to move that stuff away from the building. I used to have, when I, it's not on this subject particularly, and you'll hear this story again when I talk about rats, but I was in the city of Richmond and a lady called me for rat control. And, well, she thought she didn't know exactly what it was. It could have been a possum or an opossum or a the guy with the thing across his eyes, the raccoon. Yeah. Because it was loud. It was coming up the steps. Sure, her kitchen, her basement door and steps were right there at the kitchen. And she would hear something as she's sitting at the table eating. You know, she hears something come up and down the stairs. And this was Halloween time. So you can almost guess what was going on. I go and do an inspection, right? Which is the, you know, identification. You have to inspect the place. I inspected it first. What did I find? A Norway rat. He was standing, he was underneath the steps. He came, she had put a bag of Halloween candy behind the door on the top landing of the stairs front, you know, to the basement. And he was walking up and down the stairs, going in the bag behind the door, getting what he wanted, right? Probably some Kit Kats or something, something with chocolate and some peanut butter. They're omnivorous. They love everything, like a cockroach, like I mentioned earlier. Going down the stairs. Anyway, I went down the stairs and looked around. I said, man, there's a glass that's broke in the basement window. The door is just, I'm like, hey, do you ever think about, you know, fixing the glass now? You know, I'm not here to judge anybody about what they can and can't afford to do. But it was cold and the mouse was, or a rat was in the house. Anyway, this is about, this, the story is about a rat, Norway rat. And I go down and do the inspection, look underneath the stairwell. And there he was. He had his candy, Halloween candy. There was a Wilson basketball in front of him. He had a nest that he tore up from a Sports Illustrated swimsuit edition. Yeah, it was funny, dude. I was laughing as I was putting out snap traps and, you know, he was looking at me. He was like, "What, dude, I'm going out that window, coming back in when I get too cold. I ain't getting anywhere near that bait or near those traps." But you have to build them out, you know, and I've found over the years that there's three basic avenues for mouse entry. Now, going back to mice, and it works for rats too, but we're talking about mice today. And first is a crawl door. All right, for those of you with a crawl door, if you have a basement with a broken window, yeah, you're going to have to fix that. But three basics. This is mouse control basics. Okay. First is a crawl door. All right, wooden crawl doors over time are going to have gaps, allowing mice to enter the structure. Wood rot, gnawing from rodents are the cause of that. Consider replacing the wooden doors. Replacing the wooden doors with a metal door, because rodents can get inside of a space quarter inch or larger, quarter inch, or the size of a dime. Very small. Mice can get in there. If their head can get through there, the shoulders and the rest of the body can get in. Or if there's a gap of a quarter inch, you ever have a gerbil and you rub its head and you see how it flattens itself out? Mice do the same thing. Pipe entry into a structure. Now, I would warn you on air conditioned lines, but there's air conditioning lines. There's gas and electrical exhaust lines, plastic pipes, you know, from the air conditioning. There are highways for mice. Going back to air conditioned lines, you'll see like the black foam insulated copper pipe, and then you'll have the one that's uninsulated. All right. When you're putting steel wool, all right, dissimilar metals cause electrolysis, which means the copper being the softer metal is going to deteriorate faster. And there's going to be a hole copper gas line. And all of a sudden you're going to get into the air conditioning business. So use a copper mesh around that. Caulking, the great stuff, the foam, shouldn't be used because mice just chew right through that. You know, it's great for other things to keep insects out, a lot of the insects out, but for mice will chew through it. And then you have foundation vents. God, man, cable guys, right? Satellite guys, cable guys, or do-it-yourself cable and satellite people. I can't tell you how many times I've seen a foundation vent screen poked, you know, somebody took a screwdriver and poked a hole in it because they didn't want to drill through the, you know, especially do-it-yourselfer. But I've had many, many, many of cable companies replace and reinstall cables because they ran it through a brand new home's foundation vent, just tore it up. I was like, you do understand this is to keep rodents and insects out, right? Otherwise, why have the vent? But they poke a hole in it with a screwdriver and run the cable through. It's easy. You know, they're on a time schedule. They're usually on commission-based type thing. They have, you know, per install. They make money per install, especially the contract type folk. So replace the screen, replace the vent. All right. It's just don't do it. And congratulations, you just create a highway on mice and rats and insects if you poke a hole. Don't do it. Don't do it. Then you get to mechanical mouse control. You know, mechanical mouse control is great for many reasons. The ability to remove the rodent. Remove the rodent. That's key, all right, because it's got a major benefit. When you trap a live mouse, right, with the have a heart, you know, metal boxes, you know, the mice go in and they're running around. You can take them out. The only thing is you got to find a place to put them. A lot of people will take them to a park or take them away from the, you know, now again, they're mammals. If they just had little pinkies, the pinkies are going to die too by removing them, and you need to remove them. You know, if you take them somewhere else and drop them off, you know, probably a hawk or something's going to find it, you know. So you have to determine what to do with the live mouse. That's the only thing about a mechanical trap, a live trap. Live traps are the most humane. I get it. But then you still have to do something with it. It's like an electrical car, right? Oh, that's what I'm saving the environment. You know, it's not using gas and fossil fuel. Well, what do you think? You know, it takes power to. Anyway, forget it. You're going to need to take them somewhere and release them. Okay. Then there's snap traps. Now, I love snap traps. If you're using snap traps on your own, you know, and I've got links in the show notes of where, you know, what to buy, where to buy them, just to look at them. I don't have any affiliate links or anything. But a lot of people install these things in the wrong way. I've seen them out in the open in the floor. That's the wrong way to do it. You know, mice have curb feelers. They're called whiskers, vibrissae. And their eyesight's not that great, so they use them to keep in contact with a wall. They love edges, edges of walls. And, you know, so the snap traps have to be perpendicular to the wall. All right, so don't put it flat against the wall where it snaps parallel to the wall, if that makes sense. It's got to snap towards the wall, if that makes sense, in a T configuration, away, you know, from the wall, but up against the wall. It's got to touch the wall, the baseboard. I think they're the best way. It's the most humane way to kill a mouse. So that's just, you know, and then you can take it and toss it in a can, right? Glue boards, glue boards are great. They're fantastic. Probably the most inhumane. And I agree with that. Yeah, I mean, it is. No one wants to see Mickey on a glue board. I had a customer tell me to take the glue boards out of the house, out of the garage, because she didn't want to see Mickey Mouse on a glue board fighting to escape. So snap traps are probably the best way to go. And then you got chemical control. Now, I'm going to say this. I try to say it when using chemicals, but warning, be sure to read, understand, and follow label directions. It's the law. Now, the professional knows that, but homeowners, you know, most of you don't know. So, you know, just follow what the label says. There are products that homeowners, consumers can't get. You can get the first generation or the non-anticoagulant baits, rodenticides out there. We use in the profession anticoagulants due to the potential of secondary poisoning. What does that mean? It means, you know, if a mouse eats the bait, cat eats the mouse, well, not only the mouse is dead, but the cat is too. So there's things we have to do to ensure that, you know, we protect non-target species. So that's the big reason why, you know, you want to use, you're going to use things that's not, that you can't get. Homeowners can't use what we can use. So try, do the best you can. We use second generation anticoagulant rodenticides, and they're no longer registered for use by consumers. It's just the way it is. And I've got more information and links on rodenticides from the EPA. And I think that's gonna do it for me today. I appreciate you. Appreciate you being here with me. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, you know, send me an email, pestcontrolnut@gmail.com. You can call me. Leave me a voicemail. We can play it on the podcast, 804-424-0511. That's a Google Voice phone number. If you go to my website, hometownpestservices.com, go to the right side of the page there, you'll see how to subscribe to the podcast. Whether you have Android or an Apple product, and it's got email links as well. You can follow me on Google+, Twitter, Facebook, Hometown Pest Services over there. Like for you to like the page if you'd like. Give me a review on Yelp. You know, all over the place. Google Maps. Man, you can go over there and hit me up. It's all kind of ways to get me. Anyway, I really appreciate you listening today. And we'll do another one real soon. Take care.